Well, good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru, and I'm glad to join you this morning. I have been reviewing some of the activities that are going on in Nashville, or have been going on in Nashville. That's our capital. And that's where the Tennessee Motor Vehicle Commission meets. And on the 9th of July, they had a meeting to discuss some of the false advertising issues that I have been raising a lot of awareness about. And this is a good thing. It's a good thing for consumers, especially. It does affect car dealers negatively because it's anti-competitive. I mean, if you've got a dealer that is saying that he will sell a car $3,000 less than you will, less than the lowest price you could possibly take for a car, and the reason he can do that is because he is not, or basically he's taking out all of the options on the car. In other words, he's giving you the base price, making you think you're getting the car that's in the picture. And when you go into the dealership, said, oh, you got to pay extra for the sunroof and for the air conditioning that's already on the car. Now, that's not fair, but that's what happens. So, and it was basically not banned from the legal lingo that was in the Motor Vehicle Commission advertising guidelines. Well, let's just say it was subject to interpretation. And some of the, let's just say, dealers who play it a little close to the edge were taking advantage of their interpretation. And it's really, you know, the first rule in the commission guidelines, or maybe it's the second rule, is don't do anything deceptive. So that should cover just about everything. But then again, you know, that's kind of a, that's not being very specific, let's say. It's very subjective and subject to interpretation. I prefer rules and guidelines that are not subject to interpretation. Maybe there is no such thing. I guess everybody can look at something differently. Obviously, that is the case in most things in our lives today. But anyway, let's move on. Folks, you better make sure your catalytic converter is still on your car. Yeah, a nationwide surge in catalytic converter thefts during the pandemic has been very costly to consumers and prompted many dealers to beef up their overnight security on their lots. Now, I have cameras out here, and I have them all around my building and inside my building as well. Now, inside, they work pretty well. Just upgraded all of them to the latest technology and the highest resolution. The ones outside are way better than they used to be, but still, if somebody, you know, walks onto the lot late at night and decides to crawl underneath the car and cut out a catalytic converter, which, you know, a person can easily do, why am I suggesting that? Maybe there's some criminals listening. I hope not. But can easily get under there and do that, and I won't be able to see their face very well, and even if I do see their face, I won't know who they are, and so they're probably going to get by with it. Too many things people are getting by with right now, and you know, one of those is just false advertising by car dealers. But anyway, there's a dealer in Jackson, Mississippi that has had more than 40 catalytic converters cut out from beneath cars. That's pretty serious. What are they doing that for? Well, they want the precious metals that are in those catalytic converters. Basically, they don't want the metals. They just ship the stolen converters in bulk. They put them in a shipping container and send them overseas somewhere, and they harvest those precious metals and then turn around and sell them back to us to put in more catalytic converters or to make some platinum jewelry. I really don't know. Thieves can often get anywhere from $50 to $250 from so-called metal recyclers for the stolen parts, and several times that for catalytic converters from a hybrid vehicle such as the Toyota Prius. So anyway, recently thieves got 18 catalytic converters in one night from brand new Mitsubishi Outlanders at a dealership in La Porte, I'm not sure how that's pronounced, Texas, last month. In Maryville, Tennessee, Dotson Memorial Baptist Church had its vans targeted twice recently. The first time they hit two of the vans, no idea why, and didn't hit the third. The second time, they got two more, according to one of the pastors. When you steal something, especially from a church, you're really stealing from God. That's a pretty effective argument to not steal. So anyway, this is one of the things that's going on in the car industry. And here's something for you Cadillac buyers. Now, every new Cadillac will be electric. That's right. Every single new or redesigned Cadillac nameplate from now on will be electric, which fulfills the luxury brand's role as GM's leading EV brand. I don't know how you feel about that. I just wish Cadillac would change the names of their vehicles. I mean, like CT4, CT5, XT4, XT5, XT6. Aren't those boring names? I mean, whatever happened to a Sedan DeVille? I mean, that's a really cool name. Or a Seville. Remember those? I liked Sevilles until they started putting fastbacks on them. But now they think they have to go. Since it's a luxury vehicle, they think that those people like letters and numbers in the names instead of things like Navigator. I was so glad when Lincoln got away from using letters, or they had the MKS and the MKZ and MK this and MK that. And finally, now they have the Aviator and the Navigator, and I can't remember all the other ones, but they finally got off of that wagon train. But if you want a Cadillac, it's going to be electric. And I was having a conversation today with a customer out in the service drive about electric vehicles. And he said, you know, I would buy one if I had any confidence in the ability to get it charged up on a trip. And I said, you know, that's the big hang up for everybody. So, you know, unless I'm just going to use it around town, I'm not going to feel comfortable traveling an electric vehicle. A lot of people, I guess, look at anything like that as an adventure. You know, just let's just go out and just hope that something happens. I'm not hoping. I'm going to the beach. I want to get there. And I want to be able to pull into a gas station, fill up in about 5 minutes, and be on my way after I get some pretzels and orange juice. But, you know, I am not keen on standing there waiting for this thing to charge. And plus, now, according to Ford, with this new software system that they have on the car, you will be able to look on the infotainment screen on your vehicle, and it will show you where the charging stations are on your trip. And then it will tell you how many miles it is to them and so forth. And it will also tell you if they're being used right now. Well, that's handy. I mean, it's nice to know. But it won't tell you how many cars are in line to use it next. So, I mean, if I pull up and I know it takes about 40 minutes to charge to 80%, then if I pull up and I see three cars waiting, I've got a wait in store for me. And, you know, there may not be anything around for me to do. I can't abandon my vehicle because, you know, once one gets charged, they pull up, I guess, and the next one pulls in. And so if you lose your place in line, you just can't go to Cracker Barrel and, you know, eat while your car is waiting there. You can after it's plugged in, I guess. I don't know that I would want. I don't think they encourage you to leave your vehicle when it's plugged in. I think they want you to sit there in case it explodes or catches on fire. Yeah, those aren't good thoughts, but you know that is a possibility, right? So anyway, I think we're a ways away from this being a reality unless you're a Cadillac buyer, and then you are in trouble. I think this will hurt their sales. I really do. I don't think everybody that buys a Cadillac wants it to be electric. I think there's too much hesitancy out there based on what I'm saying. Now, I may be wrong because my sample size is not that great, but I do believe that that we've got a ways to go before that's a reality. And maybe, you know, with the new Cadillacs, maybe they've come up with some kind of special battery that'll take you 500 miles. If that's the case, then, you know, that's a little bit better. You know, I'm also thinking about when I go to a big city. Let's say I'm going to Atlanta, and I'm going to be spending the night at the Marriott Marquis downtown. And I park there overnight. What do I do about recharging my battery? What is it to Atlanta from East Tennessee? 300 miles? 250? I'm not sure. So let's say you go, your battery's exhausted. Then what? Well, you got to charge it somewhere. The hotel may have them, but if not, you're downtown. Where are you going to charge your vehicle? And if you want to come back, you're going to have to find someplace, sit there for 40 minutes or so, and then you only get an 80% charge. You see what I'm saying? I mean, to me, it's just too much to think about. Driving through Atlanta is stressful enough when you not agree. So anyway, let's take our first break, and we will be back here in just a minute.
Now, you may notice how much better the sound quality is on this particular segment as opposed to what it was. Little did I know, but I was recording on the built-in microphone in my Mac computer and not using this very expensive Shure microphone that I normally use. So anyway, I hope you enjoy the ride. Now, when we're shooting TV commercials or some other types of videos and things like that, the voice or the audio is typically recorded separately from the video. Most people don't realize that, and then they have to put them together when they're doing the editing. And so, but the sound quality really does make a difference, doesn't it? Now you can hear the fullness of my voice. We were talking about advertising and illegalities and the fact that I've been monitoring and pushing this agenda on the state. You know, if somebody doesn't stand up and, you know, when they see things going on that shouldn't be going on, then nothing happens. And even when you do stand up, sometimes it doesn't happen. And you have to pick the right ears to talk to. I happen to know the right ears. And when they are close to the seat of government, the TAA, Tennessee Automobile Dealers Association, has an attorney that has been running that thing for, gosh, 30-plus years. And he's a friend, and he also has a tremendous amount of influence with legislators, and plus all of the different state departments and stuff. He knows who to call and when to call them. There's my computer beeping again. Every time I get a news flash, it seems to have to let me know that. But anyway, it's nice to be able to have that. And plus, I went through the state representative, David Hawk, and he's the guy for this region. And David gets a lot of good stuff done, and he gets it done quickly. And I really celebrate his activism. He's really not an activist. He just gets stuff done when you ask, and that's helpful. Don't always get what you want, but when it comes to advertising laws, they should not be deceptive, and they should be able to, people, when you're in the market for a car and you're comparing one dealer versus the other, you should be able to judge the pricing differences just by reading the website. But unfortunately, you cannot do that because dealers bend the rules, and they bend the rules in order to get folks in their door. I mean, that's the objective. Now, the savvy shopper is not going to be buffaloed. He or she is going to look at the numbers, and they'll say, well, this isn't right. You have added for the sunroof. I thought that was a part of the MSRP. He said, well, if you look at the bottom of our ad, it says that optional features are not included in the price. Well, it doesn't seem real optional if it's already on the car. Do I have the option of taking off the sunroof? No. So it should have been quoted to begin with. And this type of deception is subject to interpretation, but you know, you could get by with it because it says that the only thing that you can increase the price for is the list of options selected by the customer. Well, you don't have much of a choice if it's already on the car. And so, you know, people go into the dealership and for some reason or another, they'll push back. You got to push back on that kind of stuff, or you're just going to fall victim. If they're pushing you and doing deceptive ads on the front end, that's the point where you stop and say, let's get out of here, Alice. You know, too many people just say, well, you know, we're already here and we really want this car. And, you know, these are nice people. You know, that's so many people fall victim to that. I remember a lady that called me one day, and this was early on when I first started this radio show, and she said, can I come and visit you? And I said, well, sure. So she came down and brought her paperwork from a transaction that had happened at a new car dealership in Johnson City. And I looked at the paperwork and I said, okay, you realize this is a lease and not a purchase. And she said, what? I thought it was a 60-month purchase. I said, no, this is a 60-month lease. At the end of this, you still owe, I don't remember what it was, I think it's $12,000 or $18,000 or something on the car. And she said, oh my gosh, well, what did they do with my trade? And I said, you had a trade. You know, they didn't even account for the trade. So basically, they stole her car instead of giving her money for her car. And she asked me, well, what can I do about this? And I says, well, you can sue them. And that's what I would do. And I would go to the dealership. First, I would go to the dealership and ask to speak to the owner. And then if he wasn't available, which in this dealership was a chain, so he wasn't available, so then speak to the general manager. And if he doesn't cooperate, then complain to the factory and then go talk to a lawyer, because that's the only way. You signed all this paperwork. Now, unfortunately, she came out of the ether about 3 months after she did it. And so that's a little late. That's, you know, you need to just review your paperwork. Review your paperwork when you come home from buying a car, and just look at everything and just make sure everything's right. Because when you're at the dealership, you're all excited and, you know, you can't wait to get out of there with your new car and you can't wait to show your neighbors and stuff. And then so you just sign all these forms that they throw in front of you. And they say, oh, by the way, this is included. You're getting an extended warranty and all that stuff is included in this payment. And if you were a savvy buyer, you would say, or paying attention, you would say, wait a minute, I didn't say I wanted an extended warranty. You mean that's included in that payment? How much do you take off of it if I don't want the extended warranty? I bet there's not one person out of 10 that will push back on that. And it happens every day in some dealerships. And I've told you what that's called. Do you remember what it's called? It's called payment packing. It is illegal. Not just on a state level, on a federal level. People go to jail for doing that. To me, that's stealing. And there's no excuse for it other than on the criminal dealer's end of it, or the salesperson or sales manager, whatever. They're making a lot of money, you know, and their moral compass says that's okay. You know, as long as the customer signs the paperwork that they have this stuff, you know, that it is in the contract, they're off the hook. I mean, when you buy a car and let's say they pack it full of, you know, credit, or no, not credit life insurance, they don't sell that anymore, extended warranty, gap insurance, prepaid maintenance, mop and slop is what we've called it, you know, paint sealant, fabric shield, all that stuff. So they've loaded all that into the payment, and they tell you out front, say, well, by the way, this is what your payment is going to be. And then you get into the finance office, and the guy says, or the girl says, well, included in your monthly payment is all of this neat stuff. And then he said, well, great. I didn't know that was, yeah, it's just like they're throwing it in. They're not throwing it in. It's probably costing you about $4,000. And you're paying for it. And they're hoping that you won't buck. And then if you buck, like 3 months later, it's not going to work. You're not going to get any sympathy from anybody. If you kick back maybe the next day or maybe a week later and say, listen, I didn't know about all this. Well, you signed all the paperwork. There again, signing paperwork that you don't understand. I bet there's not one person out of 100 that comes into a car dealership and actually reads the contract that they're signing, front and back. I've had a few people excuse themselves from the finance office to go out in the customer lounge and read it. It's kind of boring, and it's just boilerplate stuff that the bank puts in there. But for the most part, I mean, you might discover that there's a prepayment penalty on that particular loan. Well, I guarantee that finance manager is not going to tell you that. And the only way you're going to find out about it is if you read the contract. So anyway, just some more things that you can learn on My Car Guru. I'm a real-life new car dealer with a twist. I do tell it like it is. And you will find that there are more good guys out there than bad ones, but the bad ones are out there and they will take advantage of you, and you just got to watch out. And I'm here to help you do that. So we'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. I was telling you the other day about a vehicle that I had on an auction site. It's a 1976 Buick Electra 225 Coupe, 455 V8. And I had set a $20,000 reserve on that car. I'm telling you that, but I'm not supposed to disclose that information to anybody who may be bidding on it. But anyway, some poor guy accidentally bid $118,000 on it. He thought he was bidding $11,800. And so anyway, we got it all worked out. He sent me an email, and he was panic-stricken. And so I called Bring a Trailer. I didn't call him. I sent him an email. And they said, sure, we'll take care of it. So they reversed his bid, took it off. Well, that dropped it down. The high bid was $11,000. And folks, then all of a sudden, it took off like a rocket. I mean, it was like, I have no idea what impact that had, but that car went to the reserve. I mean, there were like 10 bids or so that took it to the reserve in like 30 minutes. And it's almost, and there's 2 days left on the auction. So I've got high hopes that this thing's going to bring some pretty good money. And it should. I mean, an 8,000-mile original car that was bought new here in Greenville, Tennessee at Easterly Buick, Easterly Motor Company, and was driven by a lady that used to work there and was my office manager's best friend that worked at our dealership. And she put 8,000 miles on the car, traded it or sold it to another guy that I know very well, the guy I bought it from. And he put it in a garage in 1977 and never moved it. So we had to do some things to that car. I told you it's bad to leave them sitting. So if you got any old cars you want to sell, rather than letting them sit, give me a call. 552-2020. That's 423-552-2020 if you want to talk to the guru or send me a text. So we'll be glad to find a way to help you out. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.